This is The Sporkful.
This is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman, and we're about to challenge your assumptions about consumption and drop a sporkful of knowledge on you. Because we're obsessively compulsive about eating more awesomely, and because if history has taught us anything, it's that the hosts of food shows need a lot of catchphrases. There is a lot of ground to cover here, so let's get right into it. Today's topic for rumination and mastication is fish and chips. Not just fish, not just chips, fish and chips. I recorded this show at Chip Shop on Atlantic Ave in Brooklyn Heights, one of the best chip shops around the New York area, and let's take you there now. So I'm here at Chip Shop with June Thomas, my old friend and colleague. Hey, June.
Hey.
June, of course, is a Slate culture critic and editor of Slate's LGBT blog, Outward, which folks should check out. Now, June, I invited you to be on The Sporkful, not only because it's been too long since
yes.
I've had you on, and because it's always a pleasure to speak with you, but because you are English.
I am. I'm an American now, but there are certain times when my old Englishness comes through, and one of those times is especially when I'm anywhere near a chip shop or a frying pan, but a chip shop especially.
And you are from the north of England.
I'm from the north of England, which is very key when it comes to chips.
Why?
Well, you know, Britain is a very strict divide between the north and the south.
It's kind of like the opposite, correct me if I'm wrong, of the north and the south in the U.S.
Yeah, and in fact, every country pretty much.
Right, okay.
Almost every country has a fancy north and a less developed south. Whereas in Britain, the north is the rather disregarded area.
Right.
It's rough up north.
It's rough up north, and there's sort of the same types of rivalries.
Exactly.
The people up north say the people down south are pretentious and hoity-toity.
Exactly.
The people down south say the people up north are
right.
bumpkins.
Exactly.
You're one of the bumpkins.
I'm a bumpkin. I'm a hick from the north. Although, of course, the north is better in every way than the soft southerners, you know. But whatever. Yes, I am. And the thing is, fish and chips, because it involves fire, it involves, you know, hot fat and exploding batter, is something for hard people. It's a food for the hardy northerners. But when I was growing up, everything that I ate, that we ate in our house, was from the chip pan. Whatever it was egg and chips. If it was lamb and chips, if we had lamb chops or any kind of chops, everything was cooked in the chip pan.
There was one pan.
One pan.
In the house.
Exactly.
And I should say now, for our listeners, for the purpose of clarity, for this entire episode, the word chip shall refer to French fries.
That's right.
So we don't need to double reference, no confusion.
No.
Today, chips are French fries.
That's right.
So please go on. The chip pan, so there must have been some magical flavors in that pan.
Oh my God, yeah, because the fat was never changed. It's just that more lard was added. So that was like, you know, really was my patrimony. You know, everything from my family's heritage was in that chip pan. There were some globules of lard in that chip pan that probably didn't have any radiation, you know, because they'd been there since before the atom bomb went off. So yeah, I mean, it was a magical pan.
And how about fish and chips? Was that something you guys had a lot growing up?
Fish and chips was a treat, but also an accessible treat, because there was a chip shop, you know, even in our village, which didn't have many shops. So it was like, you know, maybe on the weekend, or if you went somewhere, you would order fish and chips. So it was a little more special.
I have a bit of English cred on this topic. I did my study abroad in London, lived there for 6 months, had some extraordinary fish and chips at a place called Seashells of Lisson Grove, as I recall.
Oh, I've heard of that one. I'm very fond of the Golden Hind on Marylebone High Street.
I did not understand that frying could be an art.
Oh, absolutely.
Until I had fish and chips in England. So here's how we're going to work this conversation. We're going to talk a bit. We're going to order some fish and chips. We're going to eat. We're going to talk a bit more.
All right.
Later in the show, we're going to be joined by Chris, the owner of Chip Shop.
Lovely.
He's also a Brit. We can ask him some questions. One of the first dividing lines I see on the issue of fish is whether you want it in one big piece fried or several small pieces.
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
I'd never really thought of that, but it is a very British thing to have one big giant piece of fish. And in America, you often get three beautifully fried small pieces of fish. So I actually prefer the American approach because I like a smaller, I don't like to be over faced, as we say in England. I don't like to have too much food on my plate. I like the, you know, it feels more edible somehow. It feels like I could eat more of it if it's smaller. But that's probably just some weird, like, mind trick. But the British approach is always a big piece.
I prefer the British approach. I was surprised because I put this question out on Facebook and most listeners said they like the smaller piece. Maybe it's just because, as you say, you're right, in the U.S. it's more common. Here at Chip Shop, they do the big pieces. I just think that it's a sign that the place is more likely to be using a higher quality of fish.
Yes.
Because, you know, you can find a small piece of a fish almost anywhere on a fish. You can, you know,
right.
There are little. It's like the difference between a chicken breast and a chicken nugget.
Right.
You know, like you can find a nugget like in a chicken's armpit. And I also just like sort of the tooth sinkability of it. I like the idea of getting a big. I like for the opposite reason. I feel like it's substantial. It's not this sort of like chicken nugget snack food.
Yeah.
It's like a piece of fish.
Right.
The other thing that I think is an interesting dividing line between sort of the higher quality chip shop and the lower quality. Is a choice of different types of fish. What do you have a favorite? What are your thoughts on that?
I've typically been a cod orderer because that's what I grew up eating. But I think, too, I feel a little overwhelmed by all those choices. I mean, I agree completely. That is the sign of a really high-quality shop, that he's got sources of many different kinds of fish. But I kind of don't know what to do with them. So I'll occasionally have haddock, but mostly I'm a cod person.
Here they have three different options. They have cod, haddock, and plaice.
And what?
Plaice.
Oh, plaice, yes.
Plaice,
yes.
And so that's three options. And it says to me that they, let's go ahead and order. And this is a great, what's your name?
My name's Liz.
Liz, how are you?
I'm good.
So, Liz, we are debating. So there's cod, haddock, and plaice. Can you explain the difference between the three?
Sure. Cod is the most basic white fish. It's what most people order. It's very delicious. Haddock is slightly meatier. Plaice is thinner and has more of a fishier taste. I recommend the cod or the haddock. If you like fishy flavor, go with the plaice.
But you said the plaice is also thinner.
Yes, it's a little bit thinner than the haddock and the cod.
See, from that description, the haddock sounds best to me because, as I said, I'm concerned with tooth sinkability.
Right. Well, I'm going to go with cod, so you should go with haddock or plaice.
We could just get three.
Wow.
Let's do it. Let's get all three. I want to get your thoughts, June, getting back to this issue of the different types of fish.
Right.
The biggest differences to me are in the shapes of the cuts. And how that affects the surface area to volume ratio of the piece of fish vis-a-vis the ratio between the exterior fried and interior fish,
right,
and the tooth sinkability of the piece. But I don't know that they actually are going to taste that different.
Well, and that's another thing that, I mean, one of the things about a fish and chip shop fish, as opposed to, say, you know, a fine dining fish, is that it's covered in batter. It's dipped in batter and put in a deep fat fryer. And there's sometimes a lot of batter. I have to tell you that not that long ago, was made ill by eating a piece of fried chip shop type fish because it had just too much batter. And of course, I love batter, so I couldn't resist it. I knew I was eating too much, but I couldn't resist it. But it, you know, it didn't sit well in the stomach. It's not something that you really should eat too much of. And often in a chip shop type environment, you get an awful lot of batter. And it's great, it's crispy. But it's almost like it mutes the fish. It's like you've got the fish wrapped in a scarf before you cook it. And it also it muffles its flavors, I think.
I think that's absolutely right. With fried chicken, I like an exterior that's kind of craggy, that has a high surface area to volume ratio, so you get a lot of that crunch. But chicken is obviously texturally and flavor-wise different from fish. Fish is more delicate.
Right.
So I think you're right that over-battering is a real concern. You know, like, if option one in terms of the level of cragginess of the battering of the exterior of the piece of fish is sort of as smooth as the cliffs of Dover, and the opposite end of the spectrum is sort of like as pointy and craggy as the coast of Cornwall.
Ah.
Or Maine, for American.
Yeah, I'm getting a lot of southern and northeasterly references.
That's
here.
That's right. I did that just for you.
Yeah.
Between Dover and Cornwall, smooth and craggy,
right,
1 to 10,
Yeah.
Where do you want to be on the spectrum?
I want to be pretty craggy. I mean, again, it's not good for me. I know I shouldn't be, but I like, you know, if you've got a craggy, it tends to have a very crispy batter. And it's almost like, I noticed that Chip Shop actually has something on its menu that I haven't seen in England for decades. In where I grew up, we used to call it specials. And this was the cheapest thing that you could get in the chip shop, which was one of the appeals. But it was basically bits of batter that had fallen off the fish in the deep fryer. So it was basically fried batter.
And, wow.
Listeners, if you could see Dan Pashman's face right now, it's a combination of horror, I want that, I want it now, and how are you still alive, June?
So this is the... That's the cod. Oh, that goes over there. Sorry, swap those. That's June's, the cod. We have our haddock and our place.
And
wow.
Our drinks as well.
Yep.
Okay, and our drinks are coming. Our fish has arrived.
Yes.
This looks pretty lightly battered. There are a few touches of cragginess, but I'm...
Yeah, it's pretty smooth, and it's a gigantic piece of fish.
Yeah. So you started off saying that you ate a piece of fish that was too craggy and it made you sick.
It was too batter heavy.
And then I said, where do you want to be on the spectrum? And you said, I want a lot of batter.
I do.
So this is just sort of like you're going to keep crawling up the downside of the slide and keep falling back down, right?
That's exactly right.
I would say that between Dover and Cornwall with fish... I want it closer to Dover.
Okay.
I want it more like from 1 to 10. If 1 is the smoothest battering and 10 is the extra crunchy, thick, craggy, fried exterior, I want it at a 3.5.
Wow, okay.
I think the fish is the star.
Yeah, yeah. No, exactly. I mean, you're right.
And I think that this is a way to take what is a type of fish that's very mild in flavor, add some texture without destroying it.
Yeah. No, I mean, of course.
Am I being a little too logical for you, June?
No, I mean, you're absolutely right, and I admit that my preferences are foolish, and it's just it's my atavistic ways.
Well, that's why we love you, June. All right, let's start eating, and then we can talk about the chips.
It's okay if we're chewing while we talk.
We try to minimize it, but it's okay if there's some. So we have dug in here. And it's quite delicious.
Mm.
June, you live near a chip shop.
I do. The chip shop where we are today, there's another branch that's quite close to my apartment. They do deliver very fast, but even though they're very speedy, the chips are often a bit soggy. Like the ones we have now, they're beautifully, what was the word? Crisp almost.
There's a beautiful exterior crispiness, but there's a meatiness to the interior. They are not just crunch delivery systems.
You're exactly right. It's a 1-2 punch.
I'm on record here on the Sporkful. Chips, a.k.a. French fries, should really never be ordered for takeout or delivery.
Yeah.
I've identified a concept known as the window of optimal consumption.
You're a wise man.
With French fries, that window is awfully small.
Yeah, yeah.
And once you seal them into a bag and steam and condensation,
yes,
Sogginess is the inevitable result.
Yeah. Your wisdom on this is unassailable.
I also noticed, June, that you are eschewing silverware. I mean, you have a piece of fish that is probably a foot long.
It's as big as from my fingertip to my elbow.
Yeah, it's one cubit. You have a cubit of fish there.
I do.
And you are going right in with your hands.
I am.
Tell me about that.
Well, again, it's like fish and chips is it's an atavistic. It's like, I'm eating now for my great-grandfather or something. And it's something that I really can't eat with a knife and fork. Even, you know, if you're in a chip shop in England and you get something to go or to take away, they usually give you one of those little wooden forks. And I don't see the point of that. Like, it's something that you should eat with your hands.
Let's distinguish between chips and fish, though, June.
Yes,
if you're at a chip shop and you get a thing of chips and they're wrapped in the wax paper and the newspaper they come with a little fork and you want to eat them with your hands, fine. But you're literally tearing your cubit of fish apart with your hands.
I am.
Now, look, you're not going to bother me.
No.
I have no shame. But I'm surprised that a refined northerner like yourself.
Well, those two words, I think that's what we call an oxymoron. But here's the thing. That's why the batter's there. The batter is there so that you can... It holds it together so that you can take it apart yourself with your fingers. Like, that's the purpose of it. to me.
I don't know that that's true. But it's an interesting point. I mean, we eat fried chicken with our hands, but that usually has a bone.
Right.
You would not eat a fried chicken breast with your hands.
No,
most,
and you
most
couldn't,
often.
Like, hold up in the way that you might hold up a pie, for example, a piece of fish and just kind of, you know, almost eat it like a lollipop or something. So you do have to tear it apart, and it can be quite hot. It should be hot. But, you know, that's the way it's done. Now, I think this is a pretty high batter ratio.
I mean,
it's not in a negative way, but I just think it's maybe more than one would think from the outside.
All right. I mean, I disagree. This looks like, well, there are some slightly thick areas, but for my ratio, across my piece of haddock, I would say the thickness of the batter layer is 2 millimeters.
You're so European.
Maybe 3 at its thickest. But the piece of fish is a full centimeter.
Yeah.
That's a pretty nice ratio. Yeah. By contrast, now I have the haddock and the plaice here.
Yes, yes.
I think she described the flavor of the plaice pretty well, in that it's a fishier flavor. It's sort of like the blue fish of white fish.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Bluefish is like just about the strongest, the fishiest fish. Not for the faint of fish. But so I kind of like. What I don't love about the plaice is that it's a very thin cut.
Mm.
And that changes that ratio of batter to fish. And it makes it so that it's more fried, it's more greasy. So with the haddock, you get a piece of fish you can sink your teeth into. With the plaice, you get some real flavor. With the cod, I mean, what are you selling me?
Nostalgia.
That's right.
Because we're talking into our microphones, I'm holding my microphone. I put aside the my fingers and I picked up the fork because I've only got one hand, you see, listeners. And the fish is separating from the batter. Now, that is another... I mean, again, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's science or something. But I don't know. I don't know if that's ideal. I think it would be nice if you could... maybe it's a scientific challenge. If you could kind of, in every bite, always get... that kind of, almost like, you know, what's it called, beef Wellington, where you get the pastry and the beef, you know, like...
You want better batter adhesion.
Exactly.
It's interesting because I'm actually coming around to your method as you sit there now eating your fish with a fork and spilling it on yourself.
Exactly.
I'm while you were just talking, I was eating some with my hand. And one of the benefits of picking up the piece of fish with your hand and eating it is that the batter stays with the fish better. Try to sever it with a knife and a fork. It's very hard to pull apart a bite without messing up your batter adhesion. You have won me over with the whole eating this with your hands.
Now, the only thing is, I know when I reach over to touch a napkin, the napkin sticks to my fingers. So, you know, that's a downside too.
I think I might need new microphones after this taping.
Now, one thing I also wanted to, I was going to say confront you on, but let's just say ask you about.
Confront me, June. Come on, we're here at an English pub. We're drinking beer in the middle of the afternoon. We're already hooligans.
Exactly.
If we don't get into a fight, then we have failed our listeners.
It's just too bad you didn't wear your football shirt. But you didn't put, and you put some salt. You salted it yourself, which you said you were glad of. But you didn't use vinegar, and you didn't use your lemon, and you haven't dipped it into your... whatever that is, tartar sauce.
They have a tartar sauce here. It's kind of a thin consistency with a bit of mustard in it, which I kind of like.
Yeah.
I have used some tartar.
Oh, you have? Malt vinegar is absolutely essential.
I'll be honest, I don't like malt vinegar.
Oh, my. Do you not like any vinegars?
I don't like vinegary things.
Oh, my.
I love a nice balsamic vinaigrette, but that's sort of on the sweet end of the vinegar spectrum, to be sure.
Yeah.
I'll try a little bit right now just to humor you. I don't like salted vinegar potato chips.
Oh.
I don't like the bitterness of it.
I'm very drawn to a vinegar flavor. I mean, again, it's like everything that I ate as a child was both cooked in the chip pan and then just drowned in vinegar, which I think is why my arteries haven't hardened. Because
it honestly feels to me when I eat something like this with the vinegar on it, like it went bad. Hey guys, it's Dan jumping in here to interrupt the broadcast from the chip shop. At this point in the taping, our server, Liz, came over and we started talking to her. It was kind of a wide-ranging conversation. June and I were asking a bunch of questions. I'm going to skip through that part, but there was one moment that kind of changed the direction of some of the rest of our meal. As we were sitting and talking to Liz, June asked a question, and here's what happened.
Do you have a lot of British customers, as far as you can tell?
Oh, yes, definitely.
And do they order differently? I mean, do they want salad cream with their food?
Sometimes, yes, and the mushy peas, and like some things are very
popular. We forgot to get peas.
Yeah, totally.
Can we get a side of peas, please?
Sure.
Yeah. Do you? Oh, I
love mushy peas. Or
yes,
the regular?
Mushy peas.
Okay,
please.
Yeah, that's a very popular, you know, thing among like the actual English people.
So we ordered mushy peas, which technically are not fish and chips, but June was so excited and I was so intrigued. I've heard of mushy peas, but I had never had them and wasn't quite sure what they were. So let's pick it up now. Liz, our server, has left to go and put in the order for the mushy peas, and June and I pick up our conversation. Please, June, tell me about the significance and importance of mushy peas. Why are they better? This sounds like another one of those, I think objectively speaking, peas are better when they're not mushy. But it's one of those, you know, the power of nostalgia and
exactly.
flavor.
Exactly. No, that's exclusively what it is. And also, it's like, you know, strawberry flavor milkshake. It's not actually strawberry, unless it's one of those fancy natural ones. It's a strawberry flavor isn't strawberry. And mushy peas really have very little to do with peas in terms of flavor. But it's a lot of texture. And it's, you know, it's all about... It's all about nostalgia, really. And also, because they look kind of gross, it's kind of funny. Like, it's the greatest thing is to take an American to a fish and chip shop in England, order the fish and chips. They know what that is. They're ready for that. They're prepared. And then out come the mushy peas. And I've had people scream when they saw the mushy peas.
Wow.
So, you know, there's that aspect to it, too.
Well, let's keep the mics rolling.
Well, and in my, you know, caveman family... mushy peas were, in fact, made by soaking processed peas in some kind of solution overnight. I mean, I don't even know what was done to them because...
Solution? It wasn't just water?
I don't know. Maybe it was just water. it felt very mysterious to me. The idea... I mean, this was not a family that spent a lot of time on you know, long-form cooking. So the idea of soaking anything...
No sous vide action at the Thomas household?
No, no sous vide. So it's like it came with a tablet, which I think was soda... And so you soaked it with this weird little tablet that looked like the blue cake in the urinal. I don't know. Maybe I'm just kind of... Maybe the memory has got mixed up with
other things.
I can't
imagine why this dish has not caught on.
So good.
Yeah. Peas soaked in a urinal cake.
Overnight. And then people scream when they see it. You guys!
Where are they? Why aren't they here yet?
Why do they only serve in one national cuisine? That's what I'd like
I
to know.
I know, really. I mean, especially with British imperialism and all.
Know.
I mean, these things should be everywhere. I'm surprised they don't serve them at the Taj Mahal.
I guess dal. This is a form of mushy peas.
Yeah, that's true.
Or, you know...
Hold the urinal cake, though.
But that's what makes them special.
Okay. Let's talk a bit more about chips as we await the arrival of the mushy peas. What I like about these chips, and this I think is, it's somewhat true with most chips, but when you get frozen industrial chips, as opposed to hand-cut chips, which I think these are,
yeah.
I like the variation in sizes.
Yeah.
I talk often on the Sporkful about bite variety versus bite consistency. When you have a big plate of chips, I want bite variety.
Yeah.
I want some that are long and thick and toothsome. I want some that are tiny little crunchy bits. I want some flat ones and some fat ones. What do you think?
I can't argue with you. I'd love to, but I can't. You're absolutely right. I must say, I rarely really want the large ones that are, like, they don't have a lot of crisp. It's a lot of potato. It can be a little bit dry. There's a certain point when a chip gets really too big to be awesome.
Can you define that point?
No. I don't have your scientific mind, Ben.
If I got you a ruler, like just hold your hands apart and I'll estimate how far.
Let me see. I think this, what's that, like?
Inch and a half.
Inch and a half. I think that's, and I mean, and that's pretty
short.
Wide.
I mean, this one, I'm holding up one that's like 2 inches. This is too long for you?
That's more like 2.5. But I think that it's, I think that would be maybe a little bit dry and too potato-y. And I like a small chip.
Too potato-y.
Because, look, let's face it. I love a potato, I really do. But they can be a little bit dry.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean,
you really have to soak those in vinegar.
Not so much, though, when they've been boiled in oil.
Boiled in oil.
Boiled in oil. But like, here's a piece. This is just the thinnest sliver. It might even just be potato skin.
That looks good.
It's dark brown. You can see the blisters, the bubbles from the fry later on it. Just, you know, listeners, you don't need to see it. Just listen to the butt to biting into this chip.
Oh, my God.
No sound effects. I didn't add that in post. That's a crunchy chip, and I like having those as a palate cleanser. It's a little bit bitter because it's just on the cusp of being burnt.
You encourage me to just pull off a little bit of, like, there's some just batter, some of those crenellations you were talking about earlier. So I just pulled off my fish, just a chunk of batter, and I'm going to eat that for some sound effects. Because, again, at this point, it might have gotten soggy. That would be, like, if it had been wrapped up, it certainly would have. But let's see if it's still crispy. Good and crispy. Yeah. And a little bit oily.
I'm just going to keep the mics rolling because I really want us to be able to capture our initial reaction to the arrival of the mushy peas.
All right.
We're holding a vigil here.
It does have that feel about it.
Doesn't it? It's sort of like before the president comes in.
Right,
and they're,
right, right.
The commentators are kind of just,
yeah, you're, you know, BSing. Like you're putting down your pen, you know, you're just kind of, sort of, God, you know, what am I going to do tonight? You're already, like, moving beyond this. But there's still this element of excitement. Oh, and I just heard a ping. I heard a bell ring in the kitchen.
That's right.
That
could be us.
I think that might be our mushy peas.
Yeah, I heard a bell ring.
Yeah, like, this could be it.
This could be the mushy peas.
At this moment, the mushy peas arrive.
All right. Wow.
All right. No,
you're right that does not look appetizing.
It looks great, you heathen.
It looks, let me try to describe it. Okay, it looks, it's almost all of one consistency.
Yeah.
It's almost like a puree.
It's not, though.
It has it's the color of, it's not the color of peas. It's the color of Gumby.
It's the color of mushy peas.
All right, let me bite into it. You know what it reminds me of? It's almost sort of like mashed potatoes and peas got mixed together on the plate.
Interesting.
All right, well, we're joined now at our table by Chris Sell, the owner and proprietor of Chip Shop. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going well. So where in England are you from?
I'm from Rugby, Warwickshire.
So where does that put you in relation to June and in relation to your opinions of each other?
I'm a Midlander.
And I'm a Northerner.
Enough said.
So you're kind of stuck in between the Northerners and the Southerners. Do you feel a special allegiance to one side or the other?
Well, the Northerners call me a Southerner, and the Southerners call me a Northerner, so not really, no. I'm a Midlander.
First of all, let's go in reverse order because we're eating. We just got our mushy peas, which June was so excited to get.
Mm, they're very good.
June's description of how her parents and grandparents made mushy peas when she was growing up didn't exactly make them seem so appetizing. They taste pretty good, actually. They also could use a rebranding in terms of the name. But how do you make mushy peas?
Mushy peas aren't peas mushed up. It's a dried marrowfat pea, which is like a big split pea. So it's like a thick, really thick, chunky split pea soup.
That is exactly what it is. That's a great
description.
That's
exactly what it is.
Yeah, okay, so.
But no, when my grandparents used to get them, you get the marrowfat peas, and then there was some, like, a cake of soda that you would soak them with, or am I?
Yeah, bicarbonate of soda.
Yeah, yeah.
You put the dried from marrowfat peas with some bicarb of soda, a little green food colouring to give them that appetizing green colour, so they look like peas and not like gruel, and boil them to death.
Because when June was describing it earlier, she compared that, the bicarbonate insert, to a urinal cake.
Only in shape.
Okay. It made it seem less appetizing, but you're telling me it's not, in fact, a urinal cake.
No, in shape, yeah, but that was the... Sorry, June, it's the old days. We get our bicarbonate of soda and Arm & Hammer yellow boxes now, like the rest of people.
Oh, wait, is bicarbonate soda baking soda?
Soda, yeah, baking soda.
Oh, baking, you guys and your other words for things. We're in America now, people. Baking soda. Although I did agree to call them chips for the entire episode. Now, I know you guys are pretty fancy here and you put forks and knives on the table, like some sort of hoity-toity place. I normally think of June as being such a proper and upstanding woman.
Yes.
And to see her pick up her piece of fish and eat it with her hands was somewhat surprising. But she kind of won me over. I actually kind of thought it was a good way to eat. I tried it and I kind of liked it. I thought it kept the batter and the fish together more. cutting through it with a fork or with a fork and knife separated the fish and batter sometimes. How do you eat your fish and chips? Which do you think is better and why?
A bit of both, actually. It depends how messy with tartar sauce it is.
Mm-hmm. You're a tartar sauce man.
I'm a tartar sauce man, yeah.
Wow.
We make our own, of course.
Oh.
But I pick it up. I tend to pick up the end bit when I get close to the end.
Well, Chris Sell, owner of the chip shop. Everything here is fantastic. Really delicious. Thanks so much.
Thanks very much for coming, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your meal.
June Thomas, Slate culture critic, editor of Slate's LGBT blog Outward. It's been a pleasure hanging out with you and eating fish and chips.
It's been a pleasure. Dan, we just shook hands. And I think I probably gave you a little bit of a greasy hand there, but that's
mine too.
It's the hand of greasy friendship. Thank you for having me here, for presenting me with some mushy peas. There's no greater gift. Thank you.
Well, that just about does it for this episode. My thanks to the nice folks at Chip Shop for their hospitality. Hey, folks, remember to connect with me and The Sporkful on the old interwebs, on Twitter at The Sporkful. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/sporkful. And hey, check out our show sponsors. Get yourself a free audiobook. Choose one of over 150,000 titles from Audible when you go to audiblepodcast.com/sporkful. Also, free 1 month trial of Netflix right now. Everyone's talking about the new season of House of Cards. You can watch it for free with a free 1 month trial of Netflix when you go to netflix.com/sporkful. I'll be back in 2 weeks with a show on broccoli. Very excited for that one. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.